I want to talk a little bit tonight about asking the hard questions. And what I want to do is I want to turn to some passages and look at some hard questions that were asked by either maybe God or maybe someone asking God a hard question or someone asking another person. Just a difficult question, either because the answer is going to be difficult or just asking the question in and of itself is hard. I want to start by just asking anyone who would, I guess, be willing to participate. Just when I ask this question, I'm going to ask for just a show of hands. And this is going to be something that if you don't feel comfortable with, it's fine. But raise your hand if you can say full confidence, I am going to heaven. I'm going to heaven. Okay, there's not that many hands. I'm going to ask that question at the end of the lesson. And I want to explain why I asked that question at the end of the lesson. But I want you to be thinking even about that during this lesson. If you didn't raise your hand, it's because you didn't feel confident doing it. I was there too. I was asked that question a few years ago, maybe several years ago now, at just a devo at someone's house, just a short devotional, and the person started asking that, and I thought, that's a very bold thing for me to say yes to. That's kind of brash. I don't know if that's my job to say, yes, I'm going to heaven. But then as he started talking, I realized I should have raised my hand. Maybe you'll feel the same way, because questions are difficult to answer like that. You know, am I going to heaven? And to say, yes, I'm going to heaven. Or something like, you know, am I wrong in this instance? We don't want to say, yes, I'm wrong. We don't want to admit wrong. We don't want to admit fault, anything like that. Those are hard questions to answer. Hard questions to ask might be something like, how are you doing today? To someone who you know is not doing well. Or what do you say to someone when they've lost a loved one and you're talking to them? You say anything at all? You ask any questions at all? That's difficult times. And sometimes we don't like questions. You know, maybe we're asking too many questions. Maybe we're asking too personal of questions. We've all been in those situations. Some children are asked the same question over and over and over again. I had there's a little boy at Auburn that I went to the church I went to, and he asked the same question over and over and over again, and it was why. You would say anything, you'd say, why? Why? And he kept doing it over and over and over again. So I would try to, you know, mess him up a little bit and try to play with him. He kept asking over, and it got to the point where I just kind of walked away. Because what else am I supposed to do? I don't know what to do when you keep asking the same question over and over again. Grown-ups can do that at the same time as well. Our problem with questions is either because of the frequency, you ask too much, the tone sometimes, there's just some sort of tone that we don't like there, or because of the subject matter. And tonight I just want to take a little bit of time to explore some questions that are laid out in the Bible that are difficult to hear or difficult to answer. They're difficult to talk about, but they're necessary if we're going to be honest with where we're at in our relationship with God. And to begin, these are just some questions that I found, just examples of hard questions regarding life. Not necessarily regarding our spiritual life or the Bible, but I think that some of them actually would be very applicable to those things. First, are you holding on to something that you need to let go of? That's tough to ask. That's tough to answer. That's getting specific. Is there one thing? What is the one thing that you're holding on to that you need to let go of? Or what are you procrastinating on right at this moment? You see, it doesn't just say, what do you procrastinate with? That's too vague. What are you procrastinating on right at this moment? That's difficult. What mistakes do you make over and over again? Sometimes we ask questions like, you know, what are some common mistakes that people make? That's easy to answer. But what are mistakes that you make over and over again? Or maybe we would ask one another, what are some habitual sins that you have? What about, are you happy with yourself? That's uncomfortable. When did you not speak up when you should have? Not when are times when people might not speak up, because that's just saying other people might. When have you? When is a time you could think of you have not spoken up when you should have? You saw someone being bullied. You saw someone mistreating someone else. You heard someone say something was false and you didn't correct them. When did you not speak up when you should have? What impact do you want to leave on the world? I have never in my life thought of that. That is a tough question for me to think about. Why do you matter? Hopefully we have an answer for that, but that's hard to ask. Why do you matter? Whether it's to family, what impact do you make on family? Kind of goes along with what impact you hope to leave on the world. What's the number one change you need to make in your life in the next 12 months? And these are just questions I found on a website. And this is so specific. This gives you a time period. In the next 12 months, what is one change you need to make in your life? That's difficult. And lastly, what's the one thing you plan to accomplish before you die? Is that easy to answer for you? Oh, got some participation tonight. That's great. I like that. It's not easy for me. It's not easy for me at all. I don't know what I would say to that. I don't know what I say to most of these things. Are you happy with yourself? I mean, yes, no, sometimes. Depends on the day. I don't know. Who am I around? What's the number one thing you change? You make a change in your life in the next 12 months? I don't know if there's one thing. There's probably a list, but there probably could be one thing I can narrow down to say, that is one thing I ought to change because it's been a problem over and over again. It's a mistake I've made over and over again. So there's just some examples of some hard questions. Now let's get to some examples that we see in Scripture. Turn, if you will, to Genesis chapter 3. Genesis chapter 3, we're going to be bouncing around a little bit in our Bibles this evening. Genesis 3, we know this is the fall of man. Man was tempted and he fell. It didn't take long, it doesn't seem. It wasn't a whole lot of temptations that we read of. It's one right here. We only know of one temptation and we know then, boom, there was sin. This is the fall of man. So if we look down, though, in verse number 7, this is what happens after they have sinned. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. And they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. Then the Lord God called to Adam and said to him, "Where are you?" Well, if I call someone on the phone and I say, "Hey, where are you?" That's an easy question. Do you think that's actually what he was asking here? Do you think that he was saying, "I can't see you, the trees are too thick, the brush is too thick, where are you?" I mean, I think this is a tough question. And we might get a little carried away with how we apply this question, but this is a tough question for Adam to answer. There's a reason he was hiding. There's a reason he was trying to hide from the Lord, I should say. So the question for us is kind of the same. Where are we? Well, okay, I'm in the church building, right? I'm in Florence, Alabama. See, that's the easy part. But I don't know if he's talking about spiritually here or not. Because what was the promise that God had made? On the day that you take of the fruit of that tree, you will surely die. Where was he spiritually at this point? He was nowhere. Adam and Eve were nowhere because they had died spiritually. So what was the answer to this? Where are you? They were not to be found spiritually. And that could be the same for us. If someone is to walk up to you and ask you, "Where are you at spiritually right now?" What would your answer be? Would they be asking that because they don't know where you are? Because it's hard to see where you are spiritually. It's hard to see if there's anything spiritual about you. I think that would be difficult. Now, granted, we wouldn't more than likely be here if there was nothing spiritual about us. But specifically, where are you spiritually? Where are you in your walk? Where are you in your prayer life? Where are you in your knowledge? What was the last time you read? Things like that. Those are hard questions to determine where we are at. Are we dead? Are we on life support? Do we not even know where we are? See, this might have been an easy question for us to think about, to say, "Where are you?" But when we think about it spiritually, and maybe even for Adam, this was difficult to say, "Here I am. I was afraid." Because we see down, if you look at verse number 10, he said, "I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked and I hid myself." And he said, this is God saying, "Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree of which I commanded you that you should not eat?" The man said, "The woman whom you gave to me, she gave me of the tree, and I ate." Then the Lord God said to the woman, "What is this that you have done?" The woman said, "The serpent deceived me, and I ate." So as they're recounting the story, it's clear their focus is not at all what it should be on. They have done wrong. But their focus is on pointing fingers. Their focus is on, well, this didn't originate with me. This wasn't my idea. I didn't think of this. This was someone else. Or this was the serpent. This was the woman. They're nowhere to be found spiritually, it seems. And we can be the same way, pointing fingers, making excuses when someone asks us, where are we at spiritually? Or how easy is it for us to put away sin in our lives? And we can make a lot of excuses. Another one is over in Job. I want to turn over to Job. Job chapter 2. We're going to look at two instances in Job. And first is in Job chapter 2. You might know the story of Job where he has had a lot of bad things happen to him already. He's had a lot of bad things happen to his land and to his cattle and things like that, to a lot of his property, his children. And there's just a lot of tragedy in the life of Job already. People are questioning him, thinking that he has done wrong. He must have sinned if all these bad things are happening to him. And right here we have in Job chapter 2 is where Satan asked to actually inflict pain on Job, on his body. And the Lord granted that to Satan, but spare his life. Now, if you look down to verse number 7. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd, with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. So here's Job. He doesn't have to be over here. He doesn't fit in over here in the ashes. That's where all the other lepers are. That's where the people are who they're not like him. They have nothing. They're outcast. Job wasn't an outcast, was he? That's not typically what he has been. But now he's struck with boils. He goes exactly to the place that he should have gone to, because now he is an outcast. But he seems okay with it. He seems okay going there. He's going to go there because that's what he's supposed to do. So his wife comes to him, and he says, verse 9, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." I think it's the ESV that says, "Are you still maintaining your integrity? Are you still going to be the person that you ought to be? Are you still, in midst of all these difficult things, are you still going to trust in God and follow Him?" And what if we ask ourselves that question? When difficult times arise, whether it be pain on ourselves or family or loved ones or friends, or just we just see injustice, period, in the world, and we have to ask ourselves, are we going to still maintain our integrity? Are we going to still follow God and do what we ought to and still look to Him and trust in Him? As much as the difficulties were compounding on Job and compounding on him, he still followed God. Now, we know that he had his moments. We know that he was weak. But at the same time, right here, he seems so strong, stronger than I would have been. And if we turn over to Job 14, I want you to see a question that he asked to God. Now, keep in mind that his pain has not been relieved yet. There hasn't been a whole lot of good happen between chapters 2 and chapter 14. And if you look down to chapter 14, to verse number 14, he asked God, "If a man dies, shall he live again? All the days of my hard service I will wait till my change comes. You shall call and I will answer you. You shall desire the work of your hands. For now you number my steps, but do not watch over my sin. My transgression is sealed up in a bag, and you cover my iniquity." Seems to me that Job is looking past the difficulties, the troublesome times, the hardships, the pain. He's even looking past the things that he knows he has done in the past, and he is just asking God, "Please, please, if a man die, shall he live again?" He is pleading to God, "Let this pass. I want to be done with this." Because he knows that God has the power to raise from the dead. And he asks there, if you look at verse number 15, he says, "You shall desire the work of your hands. You shall call and I will answer you." He is still going to be there with God. He is still going to answer for God, answer to God. Even though it seems maybe to some that God's deserted him. That's what his wife thought. And other people are going to come up and say, "You must have done something wrong. God is doing this to you for a reason." But Job knows the truth. So a question for us to ask. Are we going to wait till our change comes? Are we going to be okay and be patient like Job was during this time and wait for our change to come, as he says in verse 14? Even though it's difficult, even though it's bodily pain and it's emotional pain and all these different things, are we going to wait? Are we going to be okay waiting and being patient with God till our change comes? And another one is over in Isaiah chapter 6. And you don't have to turn there. This is the time when Isaiah is seeing this vision. He's seeing what's going on and something that is a great sight that he's able to see. And then all of a sudden, here's the Lord. And he asks this question, "Whom shall I send?" He's asking, who is going to do my work? Who's going to go about doing the work that I have prepared for them? And you might know that Isaiah's answer, "Here I am, Lord, send me." What about for us? Same question for us. Who is going to answer the bell? Who is going to actually answer the call and say, "Here I am, send me"? I think this is a tough question because, well, we might understand, hey, there's work for us all to do. I have to put away certain things in order to do that work. I have to stop focusing on one thing in order to do the work that God has planned for me. And that's tough. So if we ask ourselves this question, let's just say that God was asking this to us. Whom shall I send? Would we be the first people to say, "Here I am, Lord, send me"? Or we look around and be like, "Well, I guess if no one else is, I guess I can. Here I am." What does that mean? That means nothing to say, "Well, no one else is. I don't know where everyone else is, so I guess I will." We need to have confidence and boldness to say, "Here I am. I will go about your work, Lord." Are we available and ready to serve God in anything that He would have us do? And we like to sing a song that there is work that we all can do in the kingdom, but who's going to do the work? Will we volunteer for it? Be the first ones to say, "Here I am." Just a couple more on this. How about when Pilate asks the crowd, after he releases Barabbas, or they say they want Barabbas to be released and not Jesus of Nazareth. And he says, "Well, what shall I do with Jesus?" Do you remember their cry? They're heartless. their horrible, horrific cry? Let him be crucified. And what if we ask the same question to ourselves? So what if that question is asked to us? What will you do with Jesus? What will we do with Jesus? Are we going to turn away and act like we're not seeing it? Are we going to wash our hands clean and pretend that that sacrifice isn't taking place? Are we going to continue, as we so often think about, that I'm the one who shouted crucify, and I'm the one, we sing that song as well. Are we going to continue to be the one to do that? Or are we going to receive Him and accept Him and understand that we will follow Him in everything? So what will we do with Jesus? We can either receive Him, we can heartlessly put Him away, like some of them did. And the last one, let's turn over to Romans chapter 6. Romans chapter 6. Because if we are the type that we say, I'm not going to turn Him away. I'm not going to be the type that shall crucify. I'm going to accept that Jesus is the Christ. He is the Son of God, and I'm going to follow Him through everything. I'm going to devote my life to Him. Well, then Romans 6 has a very good question in verse 1. Because he says, well, what shall we say then? Okay, we're in that category. We are Christians. So what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? I think that's a very valid question to ask, but that's difficult. Are we going to keep on sinning? Or let's make it personal. Are you going to keep on sinning and just hope that God's grace is there in the end? I mean, we know that we have God's grace and it's available. But are we going to keep on doing wrong because we feel like it, because it's comfortable, because it's what I'm used to, because it's not worth giving up something or somebody? After we've believed in Jesus and we've accepted that grace that is offered to us by being baptized into His blood, what next? We talked about the gift this morning. Milton did a great job talking about that gift. What are we going to do with that? What is next? Thanks, God. Appreciate that. I needed that. And I'm going to go about my business and do what I want to do. No, that's not what we ought to be. I think it's a very important question that we ask. Grace will always outweigh sin. There's no doubt about it. But we have to pursue that grace from God. If we try to stack it up and we try to say, well, does this outweigh grace? Nothing matches up to God's grace, something He's giving. We have to be the ones that pursue that. We can't just rely on it and say, I hope it's there in the end. Be confident. I know it's there, and I'm going to go after it. I'm going to pursue that. I'm going to try to perfect my life so that I can be worthy of that. And God will count me worthy. So for the rest of our time, I just want to ask four questions for us to think about. And these aren't very simple questions, I don't think. You might think they are, but I think when we look at the application, they're not very simple at all. The first is, am I pleasing to God in all that I do? In all that I do. I thought Colossians 3:17, I think, is a very good verse for this. Everything, every word or deed, doing all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to the Father through Him. Is everything I do, can I say everything I do is pleasing to God? See, the way we normally would ask a question like this is we might say, is there anything I'm doing that's wrong? Or is this that I'm doing wrong? That's an easy question, because that's something where it's, well, kind of, or maybe it is, I'll try to stop that. No, this is hard. Is everything I'm doing, night and day, week in and weekday, is it pleasing to God? Does He look down on it and say, that is what I would have a child of mine do? This isn't just saying something like, are there things I shouldn't do that I struggle with? And it's also not just saying the generic thing, I could do a little bit better. This is saying, what specifically am I doing that is not pleasing my Father in heaven? And I think that is especially hard and difficult to ask when you're younger, when you're in college, when you're, I don't know, maybe for all of us, but I think specifically when you're younger, that's hard. Because there's a lot of things that we know we enjoyed doing when we're younger that, you know, we don't put away as easily because, is it that bad? Or, well, I'm just trying not to get caught in what I'm doing. There's something deeper we need to be asking ourselves. Am I pleasing God in all that I do, in every way, in every step I take? Is it in accordance with what He would have me take? You know, we see what Christ has done. We see the path that He walked in His life. And can we say that our footsteps are matching up? Not that we're filling the void that Christ left. Not that somehow we're doing the exact same things. But just the fact that He had this godly character about Him. Do we have that? Or maybe we're asking too easy of questions for ourselves. The next one, is this world too much of a home for me? Is this world too much of a home for you right now? If I was to ask you, do you want to go to heaven? I think that's an easy question. Yes, I want to go to heaven. Is heaven worth leaving this world behind? Well, of course it's worth it. But is this world too much of a home to me right now? Have I allowed materialism in the pursuit of material things to really get into my heart to where, you know what, this world is way too much of a home for me. I believe the doormat too much when it says home sweet home, and I don't look for heaven. Maybe we try to have our families be so secure here that we lose track of the fact that we need to have security in heaven. That is blessed assurance for us. I think this is another difficult question for us to ask. I want to turn over to Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14 for our next one. We're just going to take a little bit of time reading through some of these parables, some of these stories that Jesus tells the multitudes and his disciples. If you look at Luke 14, let's look down to verse number 16. A certain man gave a great supper and invited many, and sent his servant at supper time, saying to those who were invited, "Come, for all things are now ready." But they all with one accord began to make excuses. The first said to him, "I bought a piece of ground, and I must go and see it. I ask that you have me excused." And another said, "I bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I am going to test them. I ask that you have me excused." Still another said, "I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come." So that servant came and reported these things to his master. Then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, "Go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city, and bring in here the poor and the maimed and the lame and the blind." And the servant said, "Master, it is done as you commanded, and still there is room." Then the master said to the servant, "Go out into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say to you that none of those men who are invited shall taste my supper." Have we given up anything for Christ? Or more specifically, what have we given up for Christ? Let's go down a little bit more. Verse number 26. "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." Verse 26 uses the word hate. And I think that causes us to believe that maybe Jesus didn't really mean what he was saying here. I think that when we compare the two, when we compare our spiritual family and our physical family, sometimes there's an overlap, and that's a wonderful thing. But the truth is that it does not compare. We love God. He is our Father in heaven. We long to be with Him and to be family with Him. So if it means giving up my earthly family, I will gladly do that to receive that family with Him. That is the purpose, I believe, of what Jesus is saying here. Verse 28, "For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest after he has laid the foundation, is not able to finish, all who will see begin mocking him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.' Or what king, going to make war against another, does not sit down first and consider whether he is able to, with 10,000, to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other still is a great way off, he sends the delegation as conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple." So what about us? I believe that there's a good many people in here who are Christians. Have we counted the cost? Have we forgotten the burden that we're bearing? Have we forgotten the determination and drive it's going to take? That we have to actually give all things up for him. That does not mean we cannot experience joy and gladness in this life. But when it really comes down to it, that is nothing. Anything that gets in the way of me getting to heaven and being at that feast, being with my Father in heaven, it's nothing. We ought to gladly give it up, but it is not easy. Because we have to ask the question, what have I given up for Christ? There must be something we're supposed to give up. I know there's some things in all of our lives that we either should have given up or we have given up. But what is it? And why did we give it up, or why did we not give it up? And what's coming in the future that we can see that maybe we know we'll have to give up? I think that there's more than likely some people that, and maybe even in this audience, they are working diligently and working hard to make sure that they can move up in a company, or that they will be successful in their future endeavors. But you have to ask yourself, are you going to have to make a hard decision one day? Yeah, you're going to have to ask the hard question, is this something that I have to give up for Christ? Because maybe it's going to take you to a position and take you away from things that you are not to be taken away from. Whether it be taking you mentally and I guess just spiritually away from Christ, or maybe it's physically taking you away from your family, taking away from your responsibilities and duties in your family. What have you given up for Christ? Have you given up potential earnings? I think it's worth it. Talk about this morning. Fear the Lord, if we do that, there will be riches and honor and life. There will be great riches with Him. We need to be able to at least name one thing that you have been given up for Him. I remember there was a time when I was younger that I was thinking about this passage in particular, because I remember specifically, I think it was my birthday, and I was probably 16. I had to be 16 because I could drive at the time. And I remember that my family was saying, "Well, we're going out to eat. Aren't you going to come out to eat? It's your birthday." And I think it was a Wednesday night. And just at that time, I just felt maybe even stronger than I've ever been. And so I remember my dad just saying to me, "You know, you don't have to go every time." I mean, and whether or not you believe he was right or wrong doesn't really matter. The point was that was trying to pull me away a little bit. Not a lot. I'm not saying that, you know, that would have wrecked me spiritually, or somehow I would be out there and I would be a horrible person if I had chosen to go with him to eat. But I just know that was a little bit of a tug and pull away from God to me. And all I knew to do was say, "Well, I think I have to," and just walk away, go get in my car and go to services. I think that was a very minor thing. You and I will have some major things in our life that will be pulling us away from God. What are we going to do? Are we going to be able to say, "Well, I think this is what I have to do. I know this is what I have to do. Or I know I can't do that." What are we going to give up? Relationship-wise, maybe it's money. Or maybe it's just give up a little bit of happiness in this life. And the last one is, am I going to heaven? Started out with that. Are you going to heaven? I got you to raise your hand. Now, like I said, there wasn't that many people that raised their hands. Kind of like that night when I was asked that. There weren't a whole lot of people that raised their hands. What if it was right now, though? You have time to think about it a little bit. Are you going to heaven? If it was right now, if it was tonight, whenever, are you going to heaven? I don't just mean do you want to go to heaven, or is it a plan one day? Are you going? I think that's a difficult question to ask. Well, what's your answer? Is your answer yes? Is your answer, "I sure hope so"? If it's "I sure hope so" or "I'd like to one day," then you need to make your calling and election sure. You need to be confident in what you believe and confident where you stand with God. It takes asking hard questions, but we have to have that confidence and that assurance. Or if it's no, I'm not. If it was now, I'm not going. Well, that's a difficult question to answer. But the next part that is maybe even more difficult to answer that question is to respond to it. What are you going to do about that? What are you going to do about the fact that you know you're not going to heaven, or it's in doubt or in jeopardy? Whether that means that right now you say a prayer asking the Lord for forgiveness, whether it means after services you pull someone aside and ask for their help to study or prayer, whether it means you appeal to the congregation, whatever that might be, you need to do that. You need to be able to say, "Yes, I'm going to heaven." You don't need to walk out those doors. You don't need to go about your life like nothing's happening, like there's not some difficult decision to make. There is one. It's time for us to be able to answer the question, "Yes, I'm going to heaven. I know it with full confidence because I have faith that my God is going to be there and that He is going to allow me to enter, because I'm trying my very best. I'm doing all I can to get there." And if you need to respond to the gospel, you need to be baptized and to put on Christ's blood in baptism, we ask you to come forward as we stand and as we sing. Lord.